Pull up your easy chair, put on your silver steampunk glasses, and listen up, you meatbags. We saw surrogates, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How to Discreate. We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Can't you know you won that How to Discreate? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Tall John Shear. Clone Girl Summer continues and ends with Surrogates, a clone movie, kind of. If you have not seen the movie, Bruce Willis lives in a world where everyone has a surrogate, a robotic version of their best selves, and conspiracy happens, and a lot of other stuff, which, frankly, and I'll ask Jason and June about this, I didn't quite understand at points. So without any further ado, please welcome my co-hosts, Jason Mantzoukas and June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
Thrilled to be here. You know, I'm just basking in the glow of Clone Girl Summer. This is where we're at. I'm loving it.
America wanted Clone Girl Summer. We had to take a break last week for Fast 9, which I still think fits in the Clone Girl, world, because, you know, Cena and Vin D, they're brothers, kind of look alike, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know that it fits, but, I'm glad that we've returned to it. And, you know, you said it, that maybe it's ending. I don't know. If people come up with some good clone movies that we should cover, we might.
I'm really enjoying Clone Girl Summer. And I thought Fast 9 was a real departure because Cena and Vin looked like they were not at all even, you know, third cousins, distant cousins.
Yes, not related at all.
Well, right. Genetically related. Genetically cloning. Like, that's where we were going on the molecular level on that Clone Girl episode. This one, you know, they look alike. It's, you know, it's different. It's different. I mean, Boris Kodjo looks a little bit different in his normal way.
I guess let's dive in, because to me, what was so interesting about this movie is what people and who people chose as their, not surrogates, but Suries.
Yes, they're Suries.
They're Suries.
Which that familiar way of describing the surrogates really unsettled me throughout.
I heard it, I kind of paused, because I just can't, oh God, it's so hard to imagine a world in which we're calling surrogates Suries, and the only Suri, like, we all know is Suri Cruz.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that. I was thinking about the confusion between Suri and Siri. So
be a problem. Yes. You know, everybody's Siri would be going off constantly when talking about their Suries.
I do have a lot of issues with this movie. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so weird. I just opened up my notes. I have none.
I don't understand it. I don't understand it in the sense of, like,
the
I don't want to.
The beginning of the movie has, like, is literally like a history lesson. 15 yes. years ago, 11 years ago. So I was like, whoa, you're going to walk me through the last 15 years of all of this? Like, I started taking notes, like, oh shit, this is important info.
I watched it three times.
It was like a lot of exposition.
I watched it three times.
I was like settling in because Paul, you know, starting the movie, and I was like, oh, you started. I'm just going to, you know, get a few things together. And he was like, no, you need to watch very closely the first 2 minutes of the movie, because that's where all the information is.
And that's like, you know, I'm looking at it because I wrote some of it down, including the information that I kept asking myself throughout the movie, which is that, you know, like, how many of these people on the streets are Suries? And it's 98% of the population uses surrogates. 98%.
Did you say Suriates?
Suriates. Suriates.
Well, this is my big issue with it, because you're right. The exposition dump at the top is a lot. And not only are you getting it through multiple news sources and testimonials, you're also seeing graphics on the screen. And two of my favorite graphics were worldwide study, racism is disappearing. And then there was another graph that just said crime down, surrogates up. accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of crime rates are down, disease is down. Like, there was a lot of, like, you know, they're trying to front load you into believing, like, well, this is why everybody in the world believes it's totally normal and cool to live inside of a world where the 98% of the population is only participating in the real world via a artificial robotic surrogate of themselves. So everybody is living in their homes. They don't go outside.
Right.
They just sit in their homes and they participate in life via avatars of either themselves or some people, as we see in the movie, are their surrogate or their Suri doesn't look like them at all. They are role playing or they are whatever.
This year in 2020, I did have the thought, I don't know when this movie came out, like, oh, that would have been interesting if I, during lockdown, during, you know, the height of quarantine, had the option to go out via Suri, would I take it? And honestly, I might have.
Oh my God. I mean, we would have, I mean, the pandemic would have had such a different,
if there was ever a time for mass Suris.
Exactly. I mean, we really could have used it, you know.
But I guess my issue was there seemed to be a lack of fun with the Suris. Like, yes, like they were going out and they were partying, but people were still doing their day jobs and riding the subways as Suris. It was like you had to do all that boring work that you would do in like World of Warcraft, where like you're mining, like you are
aren't using the Suris as a game.
Right.
I mean, it's not entertainment. They're literally choosing to live their lives via a Suri.
And I don't think, Paul, it's a situation where you can, I don't really know, to be honest, but I didn't get the sense. It's like, oh, I'm an actress right now, but if I get a Suri, I can go become a, you know, I don't know, president of the United States. Like, I think you still are who you are in the world.
But I guess like what I had trouble with was like, when you look at Bruce Willis in that kitchen with that Smeg refrigerator, product placement there are like notes and things on the fridge that look like schedules, like drop off this or pick up that, here's a grocery list. Like, they are still living their own life. Like, their apartments are not barren. Their apartments are fully furnished and decked out, not pods,
but only the surrogates really use them.
Only the real people use the apartment.
No, Paul. The surrogates So like when,
oh, okay.
So like that's the thing. Well, okay. But we have a little bit of a, unreliable, example in the people that we mostly get to see inside their apartments are Bruce Willis and his wife is played by Rosamund Pike.
Yes.
And they have a specific version of this, which is she doesn't leave her room at all. She lives 100% of the time in her Suri.
But I think Jason, I got
that's
the
what
sense.
I think too. Yep.
Yes, I got the sense that most people do. Now, the questions that came up for me were like, when do they use the bathroom? You know,
right. And why does Rosamund Pike need to take pills if she's living the majority of her life? Like, so she looks like she's taking a handful of pills there. Like, I think
those are, so one of the things that we haven't touched on yet, which is very bizarre. Again, this is a very heavy sci-fi concept, right?
Yes.
What if in the near future, everybody uses, you know, artificial bodies to participate in the real world? And what would happen? Who might control those bodies? Is that really living? All the, et cetera, et cetera. These are great sci-fi questions. Inside of this sci-fi movie is a story of deep, deep grief and marital problems as a result between Bruce Willis's character and Rosamund Pike's character, who have lost a son.
When I saw that dead boy, I was like, oh boy. Like, they just felt like...
Yeah, this is an age where death is not as present as it is in our own lives. You know, like, homicides don't exist. Like, when they figure out that the case, Bruce Willis is an FBI agent, that the case they're working on is a homicide, people are like, wait, really? Because those don't happen anymore.
But,
like,
the wife and the child were in a car accident.
Yes.
And in that moment, they were not in their Suris.
It appears no, because I think that Rosamund Pike has a scar on her head that I assumed was from the car accident.
But I guess my question is...
You raise a good question, because it's like, if it's been 15 years, the kid looked like he was around maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7. You know, were they out and about? I mean, it does seem like the invention of kids surreys is rather new.
Very much so.
If you're a parent.
So you still have to do pickups and drop offs if you're a parent.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you send your surrey.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, why was she in the car?
With, like, camp schedules this summer. And
you got to drop off two kids at 9 a.m. Like, come on.
I'd love to send a surrey.
Oh, my God.
I'm all up in that surrey. I mean, I also am confused.
I really, again, this podcast is never referencing Surrey Cruise.
No, never mentioned. I will say this, though. I also felt like this movie did a weird thing where the surreys at points have extreme power. Like when we're first meeting our first surrey, he jumps off of a ledge into like a club and immediately bops up like Wile E. Coyote, and you know, like, and showing like, okay, he can jump face first into a crowd of people that are not going to catch him, but yet he can pop up and dance. And then the end battle sequence with Rosamund, with Bruce Willis's partner,
Radha Mitchell,
was amazing.
When Bruce Willis is in, Willis's surrey loses his arm and is in like the kind
the
of encampment.
Human reservation.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like jumping across buildings. He's got like super strength and super jumping. So there's a weird way in which the surreys, if you upgrade them, which obviously the FBI and so forth have upgraded surreys, they seem to have like Terminator-esque qualities.
Yeah, they said at one point they're going to give him night vision. Hey, we're going to give all FBI agents night vision. If you, because when he goes to the surrey shop, he sees, you know, there. I mean, there's a lot of questions. Like, even when he's in the surrey shop, he's looking around like, wow, this is the surrey shop. It's like, yeah, didn't you get it here?
Oh, wait a minute. No, I thought that was like a pawn shop.
Oh, that was a pawn shop. I'm talking about the surrey building.
The engineering at VSI.
I know what you mean now.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Got it. Go ahead.
They looked surprised at like the world that they are living
in. It's a good question. Yeah. If 99, almost 100% of the population out in the world is surreys, then it's like, okay, but it is a private company. So everybody at one point purchase their surreys?
Yeah.
Apple.
Wow.
Apple, great example.
I mean, everyone is in their surreys. Everyone is living this life. So crime is down because people can do whatever they want. I guess they're not hurt. And you can't steal a surrey. So you can't illegal.
Because they're copywritten.
So there's a lot of stuff there, but you get to pick your look, which is really confusing to me that Bruce Willis picked like this flattened flock of seagulls haircut for his look in a world where goatees are prevalent in this movie.
Too. That's the thing. He both has his surrey has a fake wig and his real character when he's playing himself, the meatbag version of himself. Human beings are called meatbags in this movie.
I have an issue with meatbags because.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if I'm in my surrey, I wouldn't call you a meatbag because I am a meatbag. The robots are not sentient.
That's so weird.
I agree.
It's like they were taking, hits and, jabs at themselves for being meatbags. So it's like, did these surreys have disdain? Or did the people, the operators, did they have disdain for themselves and other meatbags?
I think that's what it is. I think it's the people operating those surreys are calling people who aren't in a surrey meatbags. You know, as if to say like you're an idiot for not being in a surrey. Like the way they consider the people living on the human reservation to be like fools or whatever, you know?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there is so much stuff.
So much, but also so little. I was so happy when I saw that this was only an hour and a half.
Oh, hour and 28 minutes. Barely.
An hour and 28 minutes. And I got to like the final big action set piece.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle of it and I'm like, wow, this is great. Okay, cool. Bah, bah, bah. And I click on the thing and I'm 42 minutes in. I was like, this isn't the final set piece. What is this movie? The movie was like a trick.
Well, I did feel like the first 40 minutes was exposition. Like there was so much setup. I have to say, I've been, and no, we're not giving our final review right now, but I've been pleasantly surprised at how digestible Clone Girl Summer has been. Like, it's just, it's going down real easy for
me. Well, there's two more that are on the docket that Avril was like, I don't know. I mean, look, we could keep it going. I mean, we really, I mean, we just don't know if they're going to be as good as these. I mean, well, I think the conversations have been great.
This one, at least, and I don't know if this is part of it, but these are all like big budget movies with, you know, like, you know, this is Bruce Willis is kind of giving his modern Bruce Willis kind of bland, kind of phoning it in. But like Rhoda Mitchell's great. Rosamund Pike is great. Oh, everybody else in and around the movie, even though we only get little bits of him, James Cromwell, like the rest of the cast is like really good.
Boris Kodjo is great. Like, I mean, look, this movie cost $80 million.
Whoa, $80 million.
Wow. Dollars. What? Came out in 2009.
All those extras.
Yeah.
Jason, those aren't meat bags. Those are, you know.
I just assumed those were Surrey's.
I mean, look, they have the technology.
They are meat bags.
They made Surrey's and meat bags. They made them both, oddly. But I will say this. There was a moment that I perked up. You talked about like Bruce Willis kind of dead-eyeing it through it. And I normally agree with you. Like the last, like, I would say maybe 10 years of Bruce Willis has been a bitter pill to swallow. But there was one sequence in this movie, and June, we didn't watch this part together, so I don't know if you caught it too, but where Bruce Willis like turns on the old David Addison from Moonlighting, it's when he goes back to confront Boris Kodjo in the police precinct. He's like, hey, you know, I'm out of the hospital. I'm going to get a box. I was like, he's loose. He's making jokes. I was like, where has this guy been? Like, it was light and fun. First of all, I want to talk about the Surrey performances because people are acting like full on robots. Like, the level of acting on, I guess what I would say is, in a note to maybe the director here, is like, there wasn't like a balance. Like, some people were acting like, I am a robot, and other people were acting a little bit more stilted. I would say that, to me, the most interesting one was Rhoda Mitchell, because I think Rhoda Mitchell played it like, like she didn't feel like a robot, but yet she, like, I think she found the right balance, where Bruce Willis was just dead. When he was in that robot, he was dead.
What's interesting about this movie is, and it occurred to me, like, I don't know, you know, like I said, like 40 minutes in or whatever, is for this entire movie, everything we've seen has been a Surrey. So far. Like, there hasn't been a scene that didn't, in the movie's logic, that didn't star two robots.
I mean, like, I thought that Rosamund Pike was not a Surrey when we first meet her, because he's like in the kitchen.
Total Surrey.
And everyone's a Surrey, and everyone's is.
I mean, I wonder, like, because you never see people like get up, eat, go back,
right,
shower.
Well, that one guy said, I got to take a piss.
How are people procreating? Maybe they're not.
That guy who said he had to take a pee. That was the only time when he was just frozen, right. And he's like, sorry, it was in the can. But they also show that the only meatbag they kind of show besides Bruce Willis is someone that they really have disdain for. Like, the movie has a disdain for this meatbag. Like, he burps, he farts, he's eating disgusting food. Like, he is the parody of the tech guy. It's like, of course, the tech guy.
And there seems to be like how can you treat yourself that way? And there's like because everybody has chosen to represent themselves with like platonic ideals of beauty and of youth, and everybody's kind of the Surreys allow people to like live out their lives in a false reality. And so they are so dismissive of actual humanity, you know, of a meat bag when they run into a meat bag or whatever. There's something about like, we're watching a movie in which everybody is smoothed out and looks so beautiful. And that's the interaction is with all of these Surreys, no matter if it's in the FBI office or, you know, wherever Bruce, or in a crime scene or whatever. Bruce Willis is Surrey, and I agree with you. Rhoda Mitchell's version of a Surrey, I thought was very interesting. Also because multiple people take control of her Surrey, and she does an amazing job differentiating between the personalities that are controlling her Surrey, you know, which I liked.
Well, it's interesting to me. I kept on being fascinated by it. I also felt like so many people chose female bodies, but maybe I'm wrong. Just seemed like there was the majority of Suris were female.
I was one of the things I was surprised by was that there wasn't, because I would have thought like their part of this would be like, oh, people decide what Suri they want to be that day. You know what I mean?
Like, well, then they'd have to have a lot of Suris in the bank account.
They would have multiple
account,
yeah. Suris, but that didn't seem to be the case. Everybody just seems to have one analog for themselves.
Except right. for James, you know? Cromwell, who has like a room full. But then Rhoda yeah. Mitchell's Suri like charges at the station, and then Bruce Willis's Suri charges at home.
Yeah.
So there's also that idea too, like maybe like does. I'm a little confused again. Confused about the logic, but
I bet you can do either. And at the end of the day, if you're in the office, you just stay in the office and disconnect, and you don't have to like get yourself your Suri home.
Yeah, it's like when you know? Yeah, like you're at a co-working space, and you can leave your computer and your charger, you know, in a little locker yeah. area.
And your alternate body.
I mean,
and your unit.
But I mean, it does get to something that you guys brought up earlier, which is interesting because, like, people are hooking up with their Suris. So,
yeah.
Well, how does that pleasure center work between the Suri and the human host?
That was described in the opening when they're talking about the monkey can feel things with his arm. So I believe that you would work out with your Suri and your body would actually feel that workout. So if your Suri did a crunch, you would actually get a crunch in your belly because it's sort of like that thing of like muscle stimulation. Because at one point, yeah. Bruce Willis is like gets in that pawn shop Suri, and that looked like a nice Suri, by the way. And, you know, it didn't look like a, you know, it looked like, didn't look like a bargain bin Suri. And he's like, it feels numb. And he's like, well, you got to pay extra if you want to feel stuff. So I feel like there was,
The base model is just like a robot.
Right.
But like you pay, the more you pay, the more you can feel, you can have super strength, et cetera, I guess.
But are you basically just having like these like wet dreams if you are like having sex in the real world?
Well, this gets back to like the, it's so interesting because all of these movies have so many overlapping ideas. Like in this one, they have the same silver eye colorings over Bruce Willis's eyes as we did in The Sixth Day for over Arnold Schwarzenegger's eyes, right? Like weird little spoon like things that go over their eyes. And also, like, sex is such a thing. Like, Michael Rapaport in The Sixth Day, yeah. like, sat in a fuck chair and a virtual reality girlfriend kind of gets him off, but it's all, he's alone. And that, so the Suri, my assumption is the two Suris would go at it, but each person would come alone in their own home.
Well, that's right. That's what I'm thinking.
And I also don't think you can procreate.
No.
No, and I appreciate you giving that pronunciation.
Procreate.
Yeah, you really. Yeah, I feel like I like that you really emphasize the create part.
Well, I do think that we never saw any children in the Suri world. It was only
we
at
did.
The reservation. We did.
We saw that little boy Suri who picked up Bruce Willis.
That
he was like,
a
hey,
Suri,
come
though.
That was a
oh,
Suri.
Oh,
though.
You mean
yeah.
we haven't seen like, we haven't seen a.
Like
a
children,
operator.
Children.
Yes, a child okay. operator.
Got it. Yeah, I would imagine that'd be hard for a child to do.
No, and we don't see children, really. We don't see, like, when Bruce Willis is driving down the sidewalk, plowing into Suri after Suri, like, literally, without ever worrying, like, maybe there's a real person.
I mean, I think that that's a darker version of the future that they don't even really touch on. I mean, they basically touch on the fact that, like, no one's experiencing life, even though they are. But I think that the sadder part of it is, like, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
because it's like when yeah. someone, okay, so when an operator dies, because you can't live forever, you're just mm-hmm. still, you have a human lifespan. And when, like,
my assumption would be your lifespan would be greatly decreased if you're living,
well,
if you're living via Suri, like, wouldn't your body, like, atrophy? Wouldn't you right. be more, like less exercise, less, you know, nutrition, less
Paul
vitamin D?
What
you're
saying is true, which is that. Your muscles, you are.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe
know.
If you go to the gym with your Suri and work out, does your body feel
right.
the results? You might be right. Yes,
I think that there
and
is
you
a
did,
part.
We never
of that.
Saw any older Suris. I mean, everybody's young and good looking.
That's what it seemed to me. Yes, that's what it appeared to me to
well,
be.
Well, because when
yes.
you saw Boris Kodjo like his operator, you're like, oh shit, he's old man. Like, you know, he like, cause he's like this very sexy dude, and he's got like, he, you know, he's got
gray in, yeah. And his real operator has gray hair, and
yeah,
you know, everybody seems to be younger, better version. And Rosamund Pike works at a Surrey salon. That was a late movie reveal that surprised me. Like, in the mall or something, she works at a place where you like go in and get your Surrey like cheek implants, and
they do like face off operations in there.
Yeah,
like, cause she's like, all right, hold on,
on the robot,
on the robot. Yeah, yeah, not on real. But I mean, but here's the other thing about all these movies that makes me laugh so hard, and this is across the board. Whenever you have robots like this, it's so easy to rip off faces or get like out. Like, it's like, it's always like, I'll just put like a nail file in the back of your head, and then like the skin flap opens. Like, it's so flawless, but yet like she takes off that face so easily. Like,
oh, it just flops right off. Like, if you went to kiss, it makes it seem like if you went to kiss the Surrey, like the two Surreys in the opening scene are making out, you know, in the alleyway. Like, you would feel like their faces could just slide right off.
Well, I guess if you're not really feeling their face, I mean, that's the other thing. Maybe you're not feeling their face, but maybe you are, because it's like the monkey's arm. I keep on going back to that monkey arm, because that monkey arm feels like that is, you must have some sensation, because if you're not, no one would want to live in that world. Like, I think it's a much more interesting story if you go like, oh, a global pandemic has gone on and people can't go outside.
Let's get those
Surreys out. Let's get those Surreys out. Here, it just seemed like the choices, it's easier and more fun. People are dancing, but I also feel like it wasn't that extreme. Yeah. Like, you're going to go to opera?
It feels a lot like the world is a, what are the games called? Massive multiplayer. It feels like the world is a game of,
like, Grand Theft
like
Auto
avatars.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto. Like, it feels like the game, the video game version of the future, where the entire cities are populated by robot versions of people who are, you know, in pods at home, and everybody's out, you know, partying and doing all this crazy stuff with these indestructible robots as their stand-ins. I don't know.
But yet they don't do anything kind of indestructible or fun. All they, like that's the other thing. The crime is down. Like, here's my pitch. And, you know, if anyone out there is listening and they want to finance this movie, I think June and Jason, I would love to have you star with me. I want to do a Surrey heist film where we're breaking into these apartments while everyone's hooked up, and we're just stealing all this sort of stuff, and we kind of have all this extra money. You know, it's like Ocean's 11, and we're robbing the Surreys.
That would be amazing.
We're robbing the operators.
Oh, the operators, right.
Yeah, true. I'm interested.
I was surprised, and we saw it a little bit, but it was like very, you know, this movie is all like law enforcement and, you know, a police story. That is the structure is like a police procedural kind of, we got to figure out who's doing this. But there's I like your heist version of it, which is, what if you could jack into other people's Surreys and control them? What if you could, like, if Surreys are truly, like, you know, let's, you know, the same way they're talking about, well, be careful, people are going to be able to hack your autonomous car in the future. What if hackers are like, actually, I want your car to bring you here, you know, or go there or something, you know, like, why, like, I would have loved if part of this movie was remotely hacking into and taking control of someone's Surrey.
Well, but would it matter? Because if you're the operator, you're not... If someone hacks in there, are you experiencing that, or are they just taken over that?
Either way, unit? It could be interesting. Okay. It could be interesting if you suddenly became passive inside of your own body, like, oh no. Or if you get.
Oh no, indeed.
Oh no. Or if you get bumped out. Because then if you were inside your body but passive, you could see, like, oh no, I'm being framed for murder. I'm not doing this, but somebody's doing this with my Surrey. Or you could get bumped out. The way that, you know, sadly, Rhoda Mitchell's character gets killed, and multiple people are then able to kind of commandeer her Surrey to use for either both, for both bad and good.
But then here's my question. Like, what's the plot of this movie? The plot of this movie is,
okay,
because it kind of mushrooms, right? The plot is someone is killing Surreys, but they are killing the Surreys with a special gun that not only destroys the Surrey, but also kills the operator, right? It gives you such an impulse that it makes your brain liquefy, like fully liquefy. And Bruce Willis gets like a little glimpse of it, like a little bit, like he almost gets like shrapnel of it, and his blood, his nose is bleeding. So again, you can like, if you get punched, if your sword gets punched in the face, you will bleed in the house.
And there is a very prominent anti-surrogate move, pro-human movement.
Ving Rhames leading that.
Exactly. Ving Rhames, a character known as the Prophet, is the leader of the kind of human movement.
Who we see in the first minute and then disappears for about an hour and 10 after. I forgot.
We barely. He starts the movie and then, like, yes, goes away forever.
Although, surprise, and of course, surprise.
Yeah, and later we find out he is a Suri. For James Cromwell's character,
who is the inventor of the Suris,
who made the gun? James Cromwell?
James Cromwell's company made the gun.
Now, to kill why?
VSI?
So yeah. VSI has made the gun because they've realized that this has gotten out of control.
No, so there's a military exposition dump, like in the middle of Act Two. Where Bruce Willis, after getting like suspended from the FBI, he gets his Suri killed. He invades and causes basically the outbreak of a war to happen, via his actions. He gets suspended, but then still gets to like, he walks into the FBI offices and uses the computers. He goes to the military offices and talks to those guys. Everybody, he's still doing his job fully uninhibited. Except he's himself, not his Suri, which I thought was like, how are they allowing him to do this? Anyway, it doesn't matter. The military guy downloads him. Okay. At a certain point, VSI, we wanted to make a thing that would shut down Suris so that in the battlefield, basically, they could fire a weapon and shut down whole, like, Suris, right? What they didn't know is that, until it was made, that it would kill the users on the other end.
Wow, God, I missed this. There were so many exposition dumps that okay.
Yeah. At which point they discontinued using that technology and destroyed all existing prototypes, but this one.
Got it. So there's one gun left.
So there's one gun left, and James Cromwell, who invented the idea of Suris 15 years ago, has now turned completely against it.
Anti-Suri.
And thinks that the Suris have ruined humanity because people aren't living human lives. They're living these detached lives that are not actually living. You're not like, you're not feeling pain. You're not feeling love. You're not.
But like, if you get punched in the face, you will bleed. That's the thing that I can't quite figure out. It's like, and people are not doing anything crazy. Like, everyone's law-abiding. Like, there's no crime. There's no racism. People are, you know,
I
guess.
Why do you say that? I think, I don't know that you bleed.
Well, because he gets punched and his nose is bleeding. Like when that laser ray hits him.
But I thought that was because it was that special gun. He was able to take it off real quick, but that was only because he had that special gun on him.
So you think that they are? So you think that they are not feeling true pain?
No. If your Suri gets shot, it's fine.
Okay.
I don't think you feel like
good.
You might feel like your mind might do the thing of like, oh, I see myself getting shot. That's scary. Blah, blah, blah. But I don't think you feel those bullets going in your body.
I'm just so
like
confused.
If someone was to strangle your Suri, you wouldn't, you, the operator at home, wouldn't choke to death from asphyxiation. You know, you would just sit there when Bruce Willis kicks the guy's ass who's in his apartment. You know, they're doing drugs in the apartment, whatever the future drug is that they're all doing for Suris.
Yeah.
That Suris have their own weird drug that they do. He beats the shit out of that guy, and the guy's just laughing because he's like, you can't hurt me. I'm like a guy at home. You know, I'm not a real, you know.
But then he does shoot the Suri, and he kind of spits out like that liquid, like from Aliens, when, you know, it's like, I guess my question is, I don't get this world ultimately because it doesn't seem like wish fulfillment. It just seems like safety. And maybe that's as simply as it is. It's like they're not out there, like they're still going to their jobs. They're still hanging out. And even in the Suri world, they're doing drugs where they like electrocute themselves to like feel like, like something. Like, so I guess
people
it's
like Wall-E or something.
Right.
You know, like
people are just lazy.
You know, When Bruce Willis's Surrey gets destroyed and crucified, and he has to go outside of the house as he gets hospitalized. He leaves the hospital and he says it's the first, he doesn't remember the last time he's been outside as himself, not right. his Surrey. Right. So that is, I think, pretty significant. People, even like him, who is a little bit skeptical, he doesn't leave his home.
Yeah.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
People live their lives, 99% of their lives, inside of an avatar, you know, but participating in the real world. Yes, Paul, they are working. They have to do all of society's functions need to be upheld. So they right. go to jobs, they go to dinners, they go to parties, they do everything. It's just their surrogates are the face of it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess it's sort of that idea that in Amsterdam, you know, drugs are legal and prostitution is legal. And so therefore, for the most part, there's not that much crime there. I know people might say, well, there's actually a larger drug problem there. But I'm just, for the sake of this argument, I'm just going to say the idea being like, there may have been a moment where everyone got to do everything and now it's just kind of like regulated itself. Is that kind of what we are led to believe in a way?
So you're saying you're surprised that like divorced from our bodies, it's not more of a, you know, kind of orgy-esque, crazy.
Yeah. Like why yeah. am I just putting on a toupee?
A suit
like,
and
why?
Heading like, to punching the clock.
Yeah. Like, you know, so like to me, I'm just like, I was looking for more of that. Even when they go to that club on that abandoned street in some back alley of Toronto, that's a set. There is no like, that club didn't even seem like exciting. That club just seemed like a shitty LA club.
Okay, so I think that you're equating like Surrey's almost like it is
like GTA like, or Warcraft.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It is in the sense that like it is, except that like it GTA is a dystopia. You know, like those are ish, like right, this yeah. is like this is like the real world. You know what I mean? Like people, right. all of this isn't like a fake world that the Surreys live in. The Surreys live in our real world.
Right. So not like that movie Gamer that we watched.
They have to do our
yeah.
jobs. They have to do, all of the things to keep the world going.
Because
it still needs
we
to be
do.
Done.
It's just but, not in do. Our bodies.
Right. But to me, I'm like, but I guess what I'm saying is if I'm doing the exact, like, I guess my thought is if I'm making eggs or my Surrey's making eggs, the effort is still there about making eggs. Like I'd have to go to the kitchen as my Surrey, take out the pan, crack the egg, make the egg. Like there's no like, it's not like, oh, I can put my Surrey on autopilot and I can like play a video game on the side. Like it's, you have to go through all the motions. So I don't get what's like exciting about the Surrey ultimately because I'm like, I'm doing it all. It's like, I am literally just doing it.
I think you're experiencing it all. You know, like you're not, you're, but you're experiencing it all from like the chair. You know, you're experiencing your life through a screen, basically.
If I'm not doing anything interesting, like if I'm making eggs, like I guess like I'm saying, like I guess it would have been interesting to me to be like, Bruce Willis is a FBI agent and he's not a Surrey. And then when he wants to go undercover, he goes undercover. There's just like some, like I was missing some part of it.
That makes sense.
I guess maybe what they're saying is, you know, the more money you have, the more kind of premium Surrey experiences.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that, like a lot of these seem to be base models.
Okay. So then, because the other part of it to me felt like, the Surreys are expensive, so if you do get killed or shot, like you
that's
have
it.
To then, I guess,
I
work to
it.
Go, yeah, or you have to work to get another
well, the,
Surrey.
Remember the superintendent or the landlord of the building has a robot Surrey that's very robotic, and she's like, "Please excuse my Surrey,
yeah,
mine is in the shop, and this is a crappy loaner Surrey."
Oh, right, okay, that was a point in the movie where I had enough exposition, but that was a part that was a little bit. It's too much exposition for a new part because I'm like, now I'm seeing robot versions of what I've just been told are only human versions. By the way, that Surrey that you see in the opening is a real Surrey. That scientist in that opening thing. Did you guys know that?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a famous Japanese scientist, and that's his robot version of himself. But so I guess that, you know, we're close.
I think this really is, like, I get what you're saying, Paul, and you're right. There is, like, a certain dissonance to it. Like, why use a Surrey to do the mundane elements of life, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, but you, like, when you play Red Dead Redemption, you go fishing and hunting.
I go fishing, I go do stuff that, yes.
You don't go to, like, the comic book store, and you don't go to, like, get gas in your tank. These Surreys have to do that.
That's what they do, yes. The Surreys are doing all of, they're just replacing our bodies.
Well, isn't it like when you went into that virtual reality world, Paul, and did, like, a stand-up show?
Well, when I did that, it was to perform on a stage in front of a larger group of people from all around. Like, it's almost like,
wait, you've already done a Surrey stand-up show?
I mean, I inhabited a robotic body, and I went.
Wait,
to,
did you have a full head of hair?
I had a mohawk. Oddly, I had a mohawk, and
I was so angry at Paul. He sent down our 4-year-old this morning. Just walked up to me and said, "Mom, I gotta tell you something." And then I put my head down and he whispered into my ear, "I'm a Surrey."
That's great.
He really didn't want to do it. And then when I convinced him it would be funny enough, he finally jumped in.
It would be funny enough.
Yeah. He wasn't sure if it was, I was sending him to do something bad. And I said, "She'll laugh. She will laugh." And I had Gus, our other child, ready to go with another bit from when you were going to come home from walking the dog. That was, he had a much more intricate thing where he was going to pretend like he couldn't move his arm and get caught like a robot and then go, mom, help me. I'm a surrogate. We need to get out of here. we had rehearsed the whole thing. It was really good. He had it down pretty well.
There was a run through yesterday. I was there.
He was really ready to do it. Like, he's acting like we were practicing how to act like a robot around the house and malfunction.
This movie, like, gives you so many good things. But, like, one of the things they talk about in it is now we have kid Surreys, you know, right. And this seems very much to play into what Bruce Willis and his and Rosamund Pike have gone through. They've lost their child. They've lost their only son. And they are haunted by this. And she really only lives inside of her Surrey because she doesn't want to kind of experience that grief or that pain or have to deal with that loss in a lot of ways.
But is she fucking other dudes?
I think her Surrey is partying with those guys. When he's supposed to be when she thinks he's in the hospital, she has like a drug party at their house.
I mean, listen, Paul, what happens in a Surrey stays in a Surrey.
But that's what I'm saying. But it is. Not
until you,
like,
clean
she's
it out.
Yeah, she's literally doing it, but she is doing it. Like, so she's like, I don't use drugs, but my friend Bridget uses drugs. Like, I couldn't get the crowd that she was hanging around with. I couldn't really.
Bridget,
I couldn't,
was no good. I'll tell you that much.
Bridget was the bad influence.
By the way, the best line of the whole movie is when they walk into that room, when they just like. Turquoise, like, you know, like, and they start laughing.
I
like,
wrote that down. Turquoise. I wouldn't even put that on a back.
This movie was $80 million. I'm sure, like, 40 of it went to Bruce Willis because some of the stunts.
20 to make his fake wig and 20 to make his fake goatee. Like, his Surrey has a fake wig and his normal body has a fake goatee. It's very weird.
It's so bizarre. I thought there was such a bad stunt in this movie. The guy who's out there with the special gun that can kill Surreys is on a bicycle at one point. And, you know, they're chasing him down the street and he's on a bicycle, not a motorcycle, a bicycle. And he's like, bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. And you see him turn down this corner and then he falls down 3 stairs, not like a flight, 3 stairs head first into a bunch of like cardboard boxes of garbage. Like, it was like the most base level stunt, like an independent film style of stunt. It's like, I think that will look exciting. It was so. This movie is so massive and big, and it's like, boom. Like, it was so.
When you said it cost $80 million, that blew my mind, because what I was going to say is, like, yes, this movie has, like, kind of big action set pieces, some car chases, some stuff like that. So I get where it could be a little bit expensive, but then the movie stops down for very long periods of, like, heartbreaking, conversations between Bruce Willis and Rosamund Pike that are like, that are about their marital problems,
don't
that
you
are
miss about him? How.
That
Every
are about,
day.
Yeah, that are about their dead son, that are about like how they need to, like he goes to her workplace to like beg her to like, to see him. Like it's this, their relationship is not, it's like normally in a movie like this, like the family story would be very ancillary. And then eventually in act three, like the bad guys would use the family as leverage against our hero or something like that, you know, versus this, like the very prominent B story is one of grief and loss and heartbreak and not facing the horrors that have befallen them and not doing it together, that being living their lives in Surrey's is allowing them to not live together or see each other. It was very sad.
Do you think that, did they think that they didn't have Surrey's when they had a kid, or did the kid have a Surrey too? Because like, I guess
kid
my question,
Surrey's seem to be new.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I did think there was a chance that kid was coming back somehow.
Oh yeah.
Oh, interesting.
You wanted that kid to be like, you wanted James Cromwell to be like, and here's your son, but then you need an operator. And
or
that's
like
the other thing.
I thought there was a world in which Bruce would meet his son and that son was a Surrey.
Oh.
Or what if Bruce, to connect to Rosamund Pike, got a Surrey of his son and then was able to talk to his mom again?
Mm.
Now, that would have been emotional.
I honestly felt like the reason why they kept that stuff in with Rosamund Pike was it was just so good, and she's so good that it was like,
she's
terrific. These scenes are compelling, so let's leave them in.
Clearly, there were issues in this movie. I mean, it feels like...
And they wanted like an emotional story, I'm like, I get why this might have been cool. Like, the idea that like, oh, this isn't just your classic sci-fi kind of shoot 'em up stuff. There's like, there's actually heart and emotion at its base in here. It's just a lot of it is being depicted by people who are representing themselves as Surreys, so they're not facially giving us those emotions, which is weird.
Right. And it's like a lot of the movie is like, you thought you were talking to this person, but you're talking to this person. But since I don't even know that person that I thought I was talking to, the reveal is a little bit different. It's not like, there's only so many times you can go like Scooby-Doo, rip off the mask and be like, aha. But if you don't know them before the Surrey, like the best one is the James Cromwell as Ving Rhames. You know, that reveal is like probably the best one. But again, Ving Rhames really only shows up for a moment in the montage and then one moment at the end. And then it's revealed that he is James Cromwell, who is funding an operation to get rid of the Surreys of the world. And then Bruce Willis.
And his big plan, James Cromwell turns out to be like the great villain, both because he created these Surreys, but now he also is going to use the last remaining weapon that kills the Surreys and their operators to commit like a mass genocide in the world.
Oh, wait a second. So he killed the operators too?
That was his plan.
Okay. Right. Okay. Right. Because he says the only way to kill the addiction is kill the
addict. Yeah, but the crazy thing about that moment is like, why didn't he just wait a couple minutes longer before taking that
suicide pill?
Yeah. Like literally he was minutes away.
Yeah.
Seconds.
Why didn't he just do it himself? Because he just like gobbles the suicide pill, like, and then, why didn't he see his plan through to fruition?
He was seconds away.
But then when Bruce Willis does it at the end, like, I was kind of confused at like what the debate was, because the debate was abort it and all the Surreys live, kill it, all the Surreys die. But the operators stay alive, and then it's like a new utopia, and we get to see what happens after that. But the guy, the operator, the guy who plays God, the guy in the meat bag in that scene is like, do it. Like, he wants to save the Surreys, which I was confused about, because he's a meat bag. Wouldn't he want to just?
But he works for the FBI.
Okay.
He works for the FBI, and I think, and his whole job is predicated on the Surreys allow him complete, like, he's basically able to see through the eyes of every Surrey.
Right. So he's able to stop that rape in real time.
Yeah. So he's able to do so. The Surreys allow for, you know, kind of like a lot of shady stuff on the police side. The Surreys allow people to behave not great. This, like, I think what we're watching in the movie is everybody's cool with Surreys,
right?
Everybody's cool with Surreys. except for the prophet and the anti-Suri kind of human liberation front or whatever they're called. And they, but we, you see Ving Rhames is giving these speeches and you, there's these montages where Bruce Willis is hearing the prophet speak and it's all landing on him. He starts to think Suris are bad. And so when he's in that final beat and he says, okay, all the operators are safe. Nobody's going to die if this bomb goes off, basically. And the guy's like, yeah, but all the Suris will die. Bruce Willis makes the choice, let the Suris die. Cromwell was right. Suris have ruined our lives as human beings. We're not living our lives.
But yet
to
we
their
don't
fullest.
Get that final moment of everyone taking off their steampunk glasses and going like, oh, who am I? Like, you know.
Well, you don't, but you see them
you
all
see
walk
them
out of their houses.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And look at the Suris on the ground and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised that there weren't more consequences to everybody being detached from Suris. I expected planes falling from the sky, like
yeah, we
all
wanted
manner
that.
Of thing.
We saw a couple cars crash.
Right. And listen, there's a major cleanup. Like someone's got to get out there.
I mean, there's a
remove
lot.
Remove so many Suris.
So many.
You got to put them in a big pile. I mean, by the way, the way that they exploded didn't seem like they would be, like, I guess my issue is like, and what's to stop a scientist from fixing these Suris?
For sure.
Well, I mean, look, you know, look, for every Cromwell, there's another Cromwell. That's what I always say.
Oh, I think, I think this culture is going
to
be
addicted
resurrified almost immediately.
Yeah, this is a bad plan. I mean, luckily.
Listen, if they're going to compare it to an addiction, some new dealer is going to come along and be like, I've got a, you remember Suris? Guess what? We got more.
Well,
let's go.
To me, my issue
version
would be
two.
Like, version two is let that Suri go to work for you. And then you can go to the club dressed as, you know, a duck and figure out whatever you want to do. A like, duck. You know, like, let's just like have fun. Like, let's break some rules here. Let's like, you know, like, because there were those two Suris that we saw in the subway, and I think that was supposed to be like, I thought that was supposed to be like, you can be anything you want in this world. They didn't look particularly human. Am I totally wrong on
that level of wish fulfillment? I think that
I guess maybe I'm hung up on this.
I mean, it was an interesting concept. Like, oh, what are beauty standards? Are you attracted to people you think you're attracted to when everybody is good looking? Like that,
right? Okay.
Is an interesting idea. Like when everybody's achieved what in our culture is unachievable, which is like the meeting the beauty standards, then what?
Is that hair beauty standards for Bruce Willis? Like if you saw Bruce Willis, you'd be like, that guy.
Well, that's the thing. He and his wife chose the same faces and bodies, which was interesting.
Well, and Radha Mitchell comments on it when she meets him in person.
Right.
She says, oh, your Suri looks a lot like you. Like, and she's surprised. Like, oh, that's not normally the case that people's Suris so closely resemble their actual selves, you know? And the pawn shop guy, he's like, well, what? I can take this down. I can make you younger. I can make you this. I can make you that. Like, he's upselling him on all of the kind of Suri ways that you cannot be trapped in your actual self.
Should we make a shirt for this show, like, that just says, don't ask me, ask my operator? Or like, or like some sort of like.
Is there a t-shirt that's like, my operator is a meatbag?
See, that, I think that that's good. Or maybe there should be one shirt that says surrogate and the other shirt that says meatbag.
That's good too. Yeah.
Just a whole line of clothing.
But I almost feel like it should be an outline of a person, one of which is like very symmetrical and normal surrogate, and one that is like a normal person's face or something like, and then it should say operator. Like it should almost be like, you know, we should see the kind of a before and after. I don't know.
This is a very complicated shirt, but I'm into it all. I think there's a shirt in here. We should take a look at that. And I got to say, obviously, we had an opinion about this movie. There are people out there with a different opinion. These are now second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. I need a second opinion.
All right, these are 5-star reviews, cold from the internet here. They're very interesting. People are very excited about this movie, The Hinnack. In 2016, 7 years after this film came out, gave it 5 out of 5 stars and said, awesome movie. I am a geek by birth, always out of place, decent looking, but with the mind of the ugliest geek, the kind of guy you'd make fun of if my persona were to be made physical, but in this body, you'd never know. Similar to this movie. I want to know what people do and how they treat other people, and this movie taps into that, the real raw emotion of the world we live in, how fake people wish to be just like normal people and accepted. This movie explores that right to the edge. Bruce Willis plays that role probably better than any other. What a ride. 5 stars. I like that this person is tapping them, you know, kind of patting themselves on the back. They are pretty, like, they are living the Surrey life. pretty bold thing to make. I get it, because I am it. I am the nerd.
I'm already there, so I get that this movie wants my life.
Rosalund, also in 20...
Rosalund,
huh? Also in 2016, writes a review titled, "This is a good movie. It tells about what life might be like in the future. The fact that I remember it tells me a lot about what a good movie it is. As I watched it a few months ago and still remember it." I mean, I watch 5 or 6 movies
honestly,
on Amazon Prime on the week.
I'm feeling this in terms of just like what makes a good movie, because as we all know, I don't remember any of them.
Well, I mean, this is, yeah, Rosalund is basically saying she watches 5 or 6 Amazon movies a weekend, and if it sticks in her mind, it's a good one. It's got to be remembered. Yeah. Some I have to watch twice, and I'm halfway into it, and I finally remember I've seen it before. 5 stars. It's more about Rosalind.
Maybe. Do we think that Rosalind is Rosamund Pike, and this is just she's
interesting. She's trying to up her ratings,
propping up her own project.
Oh, maybe she's just looking for some solace to be like, you guys all forget movies too, right? Or maybe hoping. I mean, I don't know. There's something about that idea that she's like watching movies halfway through and going, I've already seen it. I mean, 5 or 6 movies a weekend is, you know,
that's a lot of movies.
You're pounding a lot. Mark D. Hanselman writes this, copied iRobot. Good plot. Recommend seeing it anyway. 5 stars. All right. Fair. And finally, this is my favorite review, written in 2018 by Sergio Gonzalez. The title of the review is Needs an Oscar for Best Screenplay, and the review is simply this. This is actually my current story of my life.
Oh.
... Be yourself.
Whoa.
So that, Sergio Gonzalez,
and I wonder,
I'm sorry.
I'd love to know more.
Yeah, is that a Surrey or is that a meatbag?
I'm an FBI agent. I'm investigating a murder. I'm using a Surrey.
I mean, it's a hard thing to say. This is the movie of your life, like Lady Bird. I understand. Oh yeah, that's like that's I recognize that. That's like my childhood. This movie, it's hard to be like, this is the movie of my life.
Do you think that Greta Gerwig made Lady Bird about your childhood?
No, I'm just saying I've heard a lot
of your childhood stories.
No, I didn't see any of them. I was just saying that, like, I think a lot of people can identify with that as something like personal. I could see that, but I don't think how you can relate to a movie like...
I just missed the scenes in Lady Bird where she's working at Blockbuster.
Lady Bird 2. Look out for it. Lady Bird 2.
French her grandmother.
Oh, mother.
Yes. Lady Bird 2.
I will tell you this much. 2 things I thought were interesting. Bruce Willis would not come back to do ADR. So when the movie was being restructured, they brought in a sound-alike voiceover actor to do some of Bruce's lines. And
that's amazing.
The director said this about the film. This film is different than your typical Hollywood thriller. We know from test audiences who have seen the movie that they are finding it very thought-provoking.
Oh, that's such a measured statement.
Thought-provoking. Well, this movie did cost $80 and
that is shocking
to
me.
Yeah, that was...
That is shocking to me.
But I do think there's a lot of CGI that went into it. Like, the way the Surreys look, like, every single frame that a Surrey is in, their faces are painted. That's soft, like, kind of soft.
No,
focus.
You're right.
Like, I imagine that costs a lot of money.
I'm just shocked that they spent that much money at this stage. Because this feels like... Because Bruce Willis now puts out, like... 6 movies a year that mostly play internationally that are not interesting and don't really have an audience here domestically. And so in my mind, this was one of those, but it's clearly not because it's so expensive.
But here's what I'm going to say. The worldwide gross of this movie, $122 million. The domestic gross, $38 million.
Wow.
So this movie still works.
That is it.
This movie still is working. Bruce Willis is still bringing them in. internationally. I mean, this wow. movie, you know, doesn't double it, but it makes, I mean, it makes a pretty penny.
So yeah, no, this movie is profitable, you know, even at 80 million.
This movie did beat All About Steve, Gamer, and Crank 2 High Voltage. It was beaten by Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, Fast and Furious, and Old Dogs. Yeah, so that's what's happening in 2009 when this movie comes out. Jason, June, would you recommend people seeing this movie?
You know, I kind of enjoyed it. I have to say, I like the, first of all, like, love the length. You know, it
yeah,
felt
oh God.
Really
yeah,
so fulfilling. Digestible. And I think if you've listened to this podcast and want to see what we're talking about, then it's really a fine watch.
I think so far, I agree. And so far, you know, all of Clone Girl Summer has been completely watchable. And yes. I will say, too, a lot of similar themes, you know, between Sixth Day, not this, little less Sixth Day, but Replicas, certainly. There's so much about grief and loss of children and, you know, this idea of cloning and all this stuff being in an effort to get something back that is lost or something like that. You know, these seem to all be operating on in worlds in which it's at least interesting, not just nonsense.
Yeah.
There are, like, the emotional components sometimes don't always add up or don't always make sense, but they do make the movies much better to watch, I will
say. Yes. And I do think there was something about all of them exiting their houses at the end after all the Suris were killed in robes and sort of unkempt that felt very kind of post COVID, where I know we're not in that world yet, but it felt familiar, like, oh, we've all had ways to connect, but are we really out there yet? And whoa, there was something particularly right now about that scene. And again, the movie doesn't add up to much, but there are moments in it, I think watching it right now, where it felt really relevant.
I agree, because we don't have surrogates necessarily, like the are like physical avatars that go enter the world for us. I do think especially in this last year and a half alone, we have spent a tremendous amount of our time at home, but living our lives like online, living our lives in screens, living our lives, you know, virtually, but just not that virtual life isn't manifested by a physical analog.
Getting a ring light, getting, you know, hitting that touch up my appearance filter on Zoom, trying to embrace this, you know, this new world of who am I? I love it.
We're almost close. I mean, watch this movie as a cautionary tale, or watch this movie so that you understand the very near future that's about to happen to us.
I mean, here we are, 14 years ago. This is it. They're going to play this clip in the next movie, the montage, to clue you all in. So, Jason, June, anything you want to talk about, promote, anything at all?
I've got a small part on a really great stop motion animation show on AMC called Ultra City Smiths.
Oh, I'm so excited
Steve
about
Conrad
this.
Created.
The guy who created The Patriot. Right.
He did Patriot. He did Perpetual Grace Limited. And now he's doing like a very dark, gritty crime story starring Dolls, stop motion style on AMC. It's great. And that's it.
I love it.
You know, everything else is good.
Junie?
Yeah. I would love everyone to check out The Deep Dive with me and Jessica St. Clair on Earwolf and wherever you find your podcasts. And also if you're interested in the Jane Club, head to janeclub.com to find out more about what we're up to.
I love it. And as always, you can check out my Discord at discord.gg/Paul Scheer. You know, if you want to just maybe get Showtime for a month and binge out on the entire 3 seasons of Black Monday, you can do that right now for a free trial of Showtime. You can get it for 7 days. Watch us, watch Dexter, the reboot season. It'll be a lot of fun. And always check out what we're doing on Twitch at twitch.tv/friendzone. And if you want to keep this conversation going, you can also go to the Discord for How Did This Get Made. It's discord.gg/HDTGM, where you can talk to everybody else about what we might have missed. Keep this conversation about clones going. I know there's 2 other movies that we've considered, Multiplicity, which I think is actually a good movie, and The Island, which I've also heard is a good movie, so we're not quite sure. I'm going to talk to Avril a little bit more, but while we're talking about Avril, a big thank you to Avril, our movie producer who picks all these great films and finds all the best clone films out there, but also a giant thanks to our regular show producer, Cody, for putting the show together, our engineer, Devin, and of course, July Diaz, our MVP, Molly Reynolds, and our team behind the scenes that gives us all of our amazing art, the ghost of Craig T. Nelson and Kyle Waldron. And we couldn't do this show without the amazing research that is given to us by Nate Kiley, getting in the gritty of Amazon reviews, finding all the stats and the facts about these movies. Thank you, Nate, for all of your hard work. And thank you for listening. Remember, if you like the show, please rate and review it. And then join us next week for the continuing conversation of Surrogates on our mini episode. You can give us a call at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. You can talk about Surrogates. You can talk about your life. Whatever you want to do, get on it. We will see you next week for a mini episode. And hopefully, at that point, we'll reveal whether Clone Girl Summer continues. Clone Girl Summer. And that shirt, by the way, is up in the TeePublic shop.
Nice.
We got it. We're going to go. So teepublic.com/store/HDTGM. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. And we will see you next week on a mini episode. Bye for now.